this is the only day of the year, Easter Sunday, that I miss being at that old dump we call Tribune Tower. It's now a bowling alley. What? No, a mattress store.
Yes.
Bowling alley. They should put a bowling alley over there. That would be... We would have stayed if
down
they would
that
have,
long hall there on the main floor.
We would have stayed if they had put a bowling alley at the place.
And we could have done the show from the bowling alley.
I miss being at Tribune Tower on Easter Sunday because while it's not as grandiose as Fred Astaire and Judy Garland we saw in this movie, Easter Parade, it still was very nice. People got dressed up on Easter Sunday morning, strolled Michigan Avenue. It was very lovely.
It was. Yeah. It was.
Then they would come knocking on the window. Obscene finger gestures toward me.
I'll never forget the time
Various naked parts that they would stick up against the window, thinking they were the first one to ever do that.
I will never forget the time I was doing a newscast, and I happened to glance over to the closed-circuit camera system.
I know what you're going to say.
And I see you jumping up and down, waving your hands, and pointing at some child that was making faces at you.
No, I was trying to make him laugh.
Right, and you started to make me laugh in the middle of a newscast.
That's my favorite thing to do. If I'm on a plane, if I'm, you know, someplace in the grocery store, often I will do it. You see a kid, and, you know, the kid smiles at you, so I make funny faces at the kids.
You're going to get arrested someday.
Uncle Dean likes to make the kids laugh. I'd like to bring joy wherever I go.
How come that doesn't happen here?
I know.
I bring you joy.
Happy Easter.
Don't lie. Happy Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. Andy, happy Passover.
Thank you very much.
To you. Somebody needs to re-record that Easter Parade song. Nothing against Judy Garland, but it's from the 1940s.
You played a version by Oscar Peterson one Easter Sunday.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice version.
You want someone to sing it, though.
I want a modern version.
Like a Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars. Yeah. If
like an Ariana Grande.
Yeah, if Cardi B is available. Yeah. Who? Uncle Dean, who's Cardi B?
A Nicki Minaj.
You know what? I would like a Michael Bublé.
Oh, there you go.
Ah, perfect choice.
To do it.
Perfect choice. Harry Connick Jr., maybe.
Josh Groban.
Yeah. Would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, you know, something modern. Because, you know, these versions are from the 1940s, and they sound dated. And heaven knows on this show we don't need anything else to make us sound dated.
Any older than we are.
We got plenty of that going on. So somebody texted. This is a very interesting text to start off the show. And by the way, the text number, please feel free to criticize every single thing that you hear on the show. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. But usually there's a bunch of people that say hello when the show starts. Here we go. Somebody texts every week, shut up, you numbskulls, I'm broadcasting. Every single week. So that's nice to have that tradition. But this week it says, happy before your Easter, Dean, because Greek Easter
is... It's next week, isn't it, for you?
It's next Sunday.
Right.
You know why it's next Sunday, don't you? Why it's a week after?
I do.
Because of you get the discounts on the candy.
Half off candy, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another Easter tradition, telling that joke. And in memory of my mother, when I would tell that joke, she never liked it. She'd say, that's not funny.
Yeah, she didn't. She didn't like
Don't
that.
Tell that on the air. That's not funny. Yes, it is. Happy before your Easter. I believe Easter kicks off the brunch season. Will you and the guys on the Sunday morning show be reactivating the brunch drinking game? Do either of you remember the brunch drinking game?
No.
Not really, no.
I don't either.
No. We have to get some clarification on that.
Yeah. See, people don't realize we really don't pay attention to what's happening on the show.
It shows, too.
Yeah. Once it happens, it kind of goes out of the air. And
it's gone. It's like Lucy and Ethel on the conveyor belt with the chocolates. Goes down the conveyor belt and is gone.
That's it.
But I do like the idea of a brunch drinking game, like a Sunday morning drinking game.
Hmm.
You don't have to be at a brunch, but, you know, maybe you have a mimosa on a Sunday morning, a nice Bloody Mary, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, we do something on the show and you take a drink. You know, it's like certain signature things on the show.
How about Sunday morning bingo cards?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Something like if you have on your bingo card, Dean makes fun of Schwanee, you'd be drunk in about 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Yeah, you'd be drunk.
Or less.
But like, you know, I tell my half price Easter candy joke.
Drink.
You take a drink. You take a shot. Schwanee makes some obscure 60s reference to something.
Drink.
You take a shot. What would be a good one for Andy, Schwanee?
I don't know.
That's a good Andy.
Some sort of a sports related note.
Because he does sports?
Yeah.
Hey, oh, that's a stretch.
That's impressive. That is really impressive.
When he gives a score?
Yeah. Whenever a Chicago team loses.
Wow. Drunk. There's another one where you'll be drunk and faster than 10 minutes on that one. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. We should put together like a Sunday morning bingo card. Activate a drinking game, something like that. I like that. I don't remember if we did it. Thank you for remembering, but I don't remember. But I like the idea.
I do too.
It's a nice idea. Drinking game. Hey, speaking of sports, by the way.
Yes.
I'm going to be interviewing one Mr. Magic Johnson this week.
Really?
Because he's got an Apple TV special documentary. About his life and career and so forth. So under the auspices of, you know, that's entertainment.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to score an interview with Magic Johnson, and we'll share that next week, by the way. But, like, what else should I ask him? I mean, I'll ask him about, you know, the basic things.
Yeah.
But, like, what else? I mean, I got to ask him about the days with Michael Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
During the Lakers-Bulls legacy, right?
Yep, especially during that championship series when the Bulls won their first title. And then he came back after announcing that he had HIV, that he came back and played in the All-Star game and did a really played a great game. And I believe he coached for a little while for the Lakers. Yeah. He's a part-time owner now of the Dodgers.
Mm.
I wonder what he thinks of the...
He's a part-time owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I believe
Dodgers.
He's a small owner of an investor in the Dodgers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
I should ask him about the NBA playoffs, right?
Yeah, because the playoffs will be going on.
Hey, Magic, what's your opinion of if I knew who was in the playoffs, I would ask you about it.
Yeah, ask him when it was that the shorts became longer. The socks stretched up a little bit. Now they're down a little bit, you know.
Right. Aren't they wearing like full leggings now?
Yeah, some of them are. Yeah, some of them wear little tights.
Like leotards.
Yeah. Yep.
That they're wearing.
Yeah, I'm wondering what he thinks of that HBO series, too, that's out there about the Lakers of Showtime era.
Oh, right.
You know, if it portrays it accurately.
Right. Yeah, so I guess, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts of his own particular documentary. But, you know, I want to get into, like, relevant, you know, some sports things.
Yeah, the NBA playoffs would be a good one. And you can ask him about the Dodgers winning the World Series, too.
Mm. Okay. Okay, so Andy's done my work for me.
You got it, no problem.
I appreciate that. Take a drink. Andy's done my... There you go. Andy's done my job for me.
There you go.
Take a drink. Andy's done either one of us, Schwanee. You and I put together, we couldn't hold a candle to Andy's knowledge of all things sports.
No, no way. No.
And all things 80s music.
All things 80s music.
Should we include you then with obscure 80s references?
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Because I'm not too shy to admit that. I know that stuff.
Schwanee, do you know who did that song, Too Shy Shy?
No.
Too Shy Shy.
It's a great name.
Da, 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 da.
No.
Kaja Goo Goo.
Excuse me.
And I mean that.
I beg your pardon?
In only the nicest way possible.
Excuse me? Kaja Goo Goo.
There's some great band names in the 80s. Scritti Politti. Yeah.
Milli Vanilli.
Men Without Hats.
Yep. You know what I heard yesterday that I hadn't heard in a million years? The group INXS.
Oh, yeah.
How did you pronounce it, Schwanee?
Oh.
Was it you
it's
or
good
somebody
thing
else?
I didn't say it on the air, but I kept, for a long time, I thought it was Inks.
Because it's spelled
I-N-X-S. Yeah, I thought it was Inks.
Yeah.
And then I was corrected.
I heard their song, Need You Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
From the Kick CD. Yes.
Yeah, man. It's a deep track from the Kick CD.
You know, a lot of stations don't play the trailer of that, which is a song called Mediate. And it kind of elongates the song, and then it gets into a little bit, a nicer little riff, and it's a good little tune.
Yeah. All right. Well,
there you go. Drink.
Shot, everybody. Our goal is to get you drunk by 9:30 every morning. Because we basically do exactly the same segment each week from 9 to 9:30.
I'll take the under.
We get to the far-flung forecast. Take a drink.
Drink.
No.
That's coming up.
When I ask, when Chwani says where the location is of the far-flung forecast, and then I repeat it right after he says it, take a drink.
Uh-huh.
Happens every week.
This is a great game.
I love this. I love the Sunday morning drinking game. Very nice. Well, we have a special guest on the show today. I'm super excited. Did you hear who?
Carol Burnett.
Carol Burnett's on the show today.
That's cool.
That is very cool.
Carol Burnett joining us today in the full 11 o'clock hour. So if you've got other plans, cancel. Get your priorities straight. Cancel. And make sure that you listen for Carol Burnett.
So that means you're not going to make fun of me during the 11 o'clock hour.
No, I've saved time. I've carved time out of... I didn't make fun of you during the actual interview itself.
But you have allotted time.
I have allotted time. We built
in order
time
to do it.
We built time into every hour of the broadcast for Shawnee make fun of time. Yeah, so that's going to be coming up a little bit later on in the show. And I just wanted to acknowledge, I saw on your Facebook page, Shawnee, that Friday would have been your dad's 100th birthday.
Yes.
And just wanted to acknowledge that. What was it, 1 month and 1 day?
Yes. He passed away March 14th, and that would have been 1 month and 1 day before the 100th birthday. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And as I mentioned on the Facebook post, I am so glad that I actually did sit down with Dad about 3.5 years ago and do a video to talk about his life. You know, it's one of those things where we say we're going to do this sometime. Right. We're going to do it. And then it's too late. But this time it wasn't. And I've got several segments that I will be posting on my YouTube page. But I put up one just as a tribute for Dad's birthday on Friday. I also want to mention that my close friends around the country and I did an online thing via Microsoft Teams Friday to remember Dad on his birthday. And it was very, very appropriate, and they did a terrific job of that. I was very grateful.
Yeah, very, very nice. It's, you know, nice to remember. You know, holidays are, you know, often difficult days, you know, right after you've lost somebody. So, you know, trying to keep it celebratory and remembering you're doing a fantastic job. I've noticed on your Facebook page posting a lot of pictures and sharing, as you always have, shared your dad with all of us here.
Yeah, and I'm grateful also for many of the people that chime in and comment, our listeners to the show, and they've said the nicest things, and that means a lot.
Yeah, yeah. People love the Shawnee.
They say a lot of nicer things than the host of this show does to me, I'll tell you.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Drink.
We've had fantastic success with that.
The formula is working.
The formula is working, Shawnee. Don't try to change it. Are you ready to do the far-flung
forecast? I am. I have been.
I've got a new song for the far-flung forecast today.
No.
Yeah. At 9:22. Don't mind if we change the theme song for the far-flung forecast, do you? Yeah, man, it's Kaja Goo Goo.
I like this.
I'm going to start singing. I love the deep, introspective lyrics.
Uh-huh.
Naturally, we're in like a two-minute
That's
instrumental.
That's our background, yeah. Right.
Song was a song, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Andy, what year would have this been?
I want to say it's like 1980. Two-ish, three-ish.
Hey, I'll tell you who's not too shy. It's Dave Schwann with our weekly compendium of fascinating facts. We call it the far-flung forecast. Schwanny Goo Goo, take it away.
Well, thanks, Uncle Dean. Good day, everybody. Happy Sunday. Happy Easter Sunday. Today, we go down south. Today, we go to Hialeah, Florida.
Hialeah, Florida. Take a drink.
Take a drink, everybody. Hialeah, Florida, which, of course, is near Miami and in the southeastern part of the state, more toward the ocean side than the Gulf side.
Isn't there a famous racetrack there?
Yes.
Yep. Hialeah Racetrack.
Yep. Yep. And it was goes back all the way to 1921, actually. The city was incorporated in 1925. But we mention Hialeah, Florida, because it is the boyhood home, not the birthplace, but the boyhood home of one Ken Mattingly. Does anybody know who Ken Mattingly is?
Mattingly.
Okay.
No.
Think Apollo space program. Think Apollo 13. Ken Mattingly was the astronaut who at the last moment was pulled from the Apollo 13 crew because of possible exposure to the measles.
Oh, jeez.
And then they put in Jack Swigert in his place as command module pilot. But he did get to fly and flew several times in space. And by the way, he was not born in Hialeah. Ken Mattingly was born right here in Chicago in March of 1936. He is now 86 years old. But he was the command module pilot for Apollo 16, which left the ground 50 years ago yesterday.
Wow. 10, 9, we have ignition sequence start. The engine's now building up to 7.7 million pounds of thrust. We have a launch commit and we have a liftoff. The swing arms moving back. Saturn V lifting off the pad, building up thrust. We clear the tower.
Several million pounds of thrust. Unbelievable. Apollo 16 launching 50 years ago yesterday, and the astronauts that landed on the moon at that time spent nearly 3 days, and that's when they had the lunar rover. Remember that, Dean? The little car that rode around on the lunar rover?
I have one of those. That's what I drive around around town.
With your CB radio, right?
I have one of those lunar rovers.
With your CB radio.
Breaker, breaker, one night. Yeah, this is the lunar rover.
This is Moondog One.
But John
this is
Young.
Going to be another part of the drinking game when we refer to something that happened on the show. Either 4 hours ago or four weeks ago. Take a drink.
Hialeah, Florida, mostly sunny, 80 degrees right now. They're going for a high of 85 today.
Okay. I have to play this because somebody texted in, Dean, my cockatiels look forward to whistling along with the Andy Griffith.
Hey, there you go.
Theme song for the far-flung forecast. Please play it for them.
And every time you hear the Andy Griffith theme, take a drink.
Take a drink. So I don't believe we've ever done a request for birds before, but why not? Why not start a new tradition on the show here today? 9:26, we'll update news coming up next.
I'm so glad we had this time together.
9:37, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. I'm so excited to share with you my one-on-one conversation with the legendary Carol Burnett.
And before you know,
the word legendary is thrown around way too often, but it definitely applies when it comes to Ms. Burnett, who will be in Chicago, by the way, on April 28th, Thursday night at the Chicago Theater. She does an amazing one-woman presentation. I'll tell you more about that later on. And Carol Burnett coming up this morning at 11 right now, though. Another legendary character. He is the Chief Medical Officer of Central DuPage Hospital, the legendary Dr. Kevin Most. Happy Easter to you, my friend.
Dean, same to you. Carol Burnett, how old is Carol Burnett?
I would have to look that up. I'm going to guess mid-80s, maybe?
Wow, she really has aged well, hasn't she?
She has aged well. She is vibrant. She is, although she's had a lot of adversity in her life, You know, she's 88. We looked it up, 88 years old. She's sharp as a tack and funny as ever. And, yeah, we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. I wanted to, before we talk about a couple of COVID things, I wanted to just touch on two things first. We were out at the home opener for the White Sox at a Guaranteed Rate Field. And, you know, we were broadcasting our TV segments from outside the ballpark. And in one of the segments that we did, the, again, legendary Harold Baines stopped by to say hello. He's kind of an ambassador for the White Sox now. Harold Baines, who has just gone through heart and liver transplant surgery. And he looked fantastic. He looked very, very, very healthy, and he looked great. I was reading a story this morning about a little toddler that had a liver transplant, and it saved the little toddler's life, and she's doing great. How common is that now? Is transplant surgery, can we say that it's fairly common now?
Yeah, Dean, you hit on a couple things. So I wouldn't say it's common, but we certainly are getting so much better at it. I mean, and I don't want to brag about Northwestern, but you probably saw Dr. Brock Middle, who did numerous lung transplants during COVID, people who would have died from COVID that got double lung transplants.
Right.
And so it's getting that not only the surgery is better, but the medication, anti-rejection medication is better. Now, I think probably the big thing is donor awareness. And, you know, if you're going to be a donor, please sign up. It's so easy to do, because as you hear the stories, whether it's Harold Baines or the young individual who was saved by a double lung transplant from COVID, the impact of what we can do after we pass is pretty substantial and pretty powerful.
Yeah, and really, isn't it just a matter of checking a little box when you go to get your driver's license, something that's like super easy to agree to be an organ donor?
Yep, you can go online, and it's very simple to do. So, I mean, look, at Harold Baines is probably smiling and happy and saying, boy, he's got a second lease on life, and just amazing. And when we see what happens, you know, even with kidney donors, where you can be a kidney donor, you're a live donor. We have two kidneys. You can donate one of your kidneys. Right. So there's many, many stories of that. And even liver now, where they'll take a section of your liver. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. When I saw Harold Baines, I hadn't learned about the surgeries until after. I thought, oh, wow, cool. Harold Baines, you know, kind of a legendary sports figure in town. Nice to meet you. And then later, you know, someone said, you heard what happened, right? That he had like this surgery. I was like, he looks amazing. He looks like he could get on the field right now and hit a home run.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should all be in Illinois. We should all be proud of Jesse White and all he's done for his donor awareness. So anybody who's listening who hasn't done it, please do it. You will make an impact.
The other medical question that I had was about the death of comedian Gilbert Gottfried this week at only 67 years old. We learned that he was living with myotonic dystrophy. It's an inherited form of muscular dystrophy, as I understand it. Can you explain more of what that is?
You know, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's a genetic disorder. Certainly very rare, which, you know, I don't want people thinking, oh my gosh, could I get this? So it's genetic, and it's essentially progressive muscle degeneration. So your muscles stop working, they weaken, and they stop being functional. And it's very unfortunate. Now, he was aware of his condition. He was told, and he knew of what laid ahead of him. It's a progressive illness. There's no cure for it. There's no treatment for it. So it's one of those where when you're told it, it's sad, but at least you know what's ahead of you. And he knew about the chance of a cardiac arrhythmia, because it affects the heart muscle as well, unfortunately, as well as the breathing of the diaphragm muscle that allows us to breathe. So very unfortunate. And he died because his heart actually went into an arrhythmia that was pumping so fast, or beating so fast, I should say, that it was not an effective pump, and he passed from that.
Is it something that debilitates the body over the years? I would see Gilbert Gottfried fairly often. I mean, whenever he was in town, he would stop by the TV morning show and make us laugh until we were crying. He was so funny. But he would also show up at, you know, these interviews that I would do out of town, New York or L.A. Gilbert was there. I would see him all the time. And over time, I noticed he was just kind of a small man anyway, but he clearly was, something was going on where he was losing weight. He didn't look healthy. He began to have difficulty walking, you know, things like that. Are those all common symptoms of the myotonic dystrophy?
Absolutely. And, you know, you could probably see it in his face. You could see it in his posture. And as we lose the ability not only to do the muscles degenerate, but what they're supposed to do doesn't work. So holding up your shoulders, walking more efficiently, all of those things. And it's a devastating illness. You know, a lot of research is being done right now, obviously, on genetic manipulation. Can we do something with the genes, or can we at least identify this and make sure that people are aware of what could happen? But you hit it spot on. You probably, especially someone like you that saw him, you know, sporadically but frequently, you could notice a change in him versus someone who just saw him for the first time.
I want to ask you one more thing, because it's Easter Sunday and Passover. Families are getting together. They're having huge feasts. What kind of caution do you have? Normally holidays bring out the unhealthiest foods that people will gorge on today. Is there anything that's, especially red flaggish about what people might be doing to their diets today?
You know, between Thanksgiving and Easter, it's probably like, well, all right, you got your total daily caloric intake in your first five bites. You know, so certainly it's one where moderation is probably the best. And knowing that, hey, you know what, we're celebrating with our family. It's the first time. If you're being COVID safe, you know, go ahead and enjoy it. But understand the next week, you might want to do those extra 5,000 steps that day, or watch what you eat the next day, because I hate to take away, especially from, you know, from kids, the importance of having this holiday meal with their family.
A lot of candy is going to be eaten today.
A lot of jelly beans.
A lot of chocolate bunnies are going to lose their ears today. we know that. And the traditional main dish is ham, which is, delicious, but like sodium through the roof. And really, you want to try to enjoy it, but moderation, I guess, really is the key there, right?
Yeah, you're right. And anybody who has heart failure or any heart issues, certainly be careful about eating that. Because like you said, it's the salt, it's the sodium intake that makes you retain water, then that makes your heart work harder. So I'm sure all those with congestive heart failure or any types of heart failure, their doctors have told them, be careful what you're doing at this time, and be careful of how much what you're eating. So most of those people are going to know that, sure, take a little couple bites of the ham, but don't go back for seconds and thirds.
Yeah, okay. Well, glad I could spoil everyone's Easter dinner by bringing that up. Just be aware of it. We'll take a quick break. I've got a couple of COVID-19 questions for Dr. Kevin Moe, Central DuPage Hospital, after this. 9:51, Dean Richards Sunday morning with Dr. Kevin Moe, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospitals. 312-981-7200 if you've got a question for the doctor. So they're about to put their masking mandate back up in Philadelphia. I presume numbers are going up there. Do you think that will be a trend around the United States, and especially here in the Chicago area for us?
Dina, I think it's going to be interesting. It'll be like a little mini experiment. And I also think it's interesting the timing of it. Now, if I'm the mayor, why am I going to wait for the day after Easter when everybody is going to all these restaurants and brunches and all that to say, hey, we have the problem? So it will be interesting. You know, their cases are going up. They're doubling every 2 days. Hospitalizations are still low, but they were only off the mask mandate from March 2nd. So not even a full 2 months before they ended up going back onto this. So we will all be watching very closely to see how the cases trend in Philadelphia and how the hospitalizations trend.
Do you think that's also why the federal travel mask mandate has been extended? Everybody thought that they were going to end it, but they have now decided to extend it to May 3rd. Same reason, because of the BA2 rates, the Omicron 2 rates that are going up?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you're looking at what's going on in New York, where not only the rates are going up, but now their hospitalizations are starting to tick up a little bit, it would not surprise me to see them extend this again, because we haven't seen, you know, we're seeing this uptick, and now we have BA4 and BA5 that are, you know, starting to circulate around the world. So I think they're going to have to make a decision. Are we going to continue with mask mandates, knowing that we're going to continue to have sub-variants that we really can't control?
So given all of that now, with Easter and Passover family get-togethers now, do you think it's a smart idea to put the masks back on around you know, close proximity to people when you're indoors? Do you think social distancing, again, makes sense?
Well, I think probably one of the biggest thing is vaccination. So if you're fully vaccinated and boosted, you know, the chance of you getting a severe illness, which is what we're protecting from, is extremely low. That, and, you know, eventually sometime the weather in Chicago has got to get better. I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but we have to get better so that we're spending more time outside. And really, I would say what you really want to do is be careful around those immunocompromised and those seniors. Those are the ones that we're trying to protect. So will we go back to a mask mandate? I'm not so sure, but certainly use your wisdom, use your common sense of when you're going to be around people to mask appropriately. And I think we're going to get to a point where we just keep a mask in our pocket and we're wearing it, yep, you know, when we think we should be.
Yep, yep. Here's a text kind of merging a couple of things that we've talked about. Can COVID patients donate organs?
Absolutely. 100% they can, just like someone with influenza could donate organs. Now, that being said, you know, depending how bad your COVID was and, you know, some individuals who were ravaged with COVID say, oh, I want to be a lung transplant, lung donor, your lungs may not be in the condition to do that. But certainly other organs, corneas, livers, kidneys, heart, absolutely we would.
Can somebody with diabetes be an organ donor?
100% again. You know, the microvascular changes in diabetes, obviously people who have it know that it can impact their kidneys. It can, but certainly a healthy diabetic can still be a donor. You know, people have to understand that when we say organ donors, we're talking about skin, we're talking about corneas, you know, we're talking about more and more different parts that are going to make an impact in someone else's life. So, yes, absolutely.
And someone asking, they had 3 of their vaccinations, a vaccination and 2 boosters, Moderna. The vaccination and a booster, Moderna.
Right.
Then they switched to Pfizer and had a reaction to the Pfizer. Is that because they switched brands? What would be the reason for something like that?
Yeah, it certainly could be. It could be that you switch brands. It could be that your immune system now is so looking for this that once it saw that again, that boosted immune response caused the side effects, the inflammation, the muscle aches, the fever. So I wouldn't, you know, blame it on the vaccine, but certainly it's the body's immune response. Some people will do fine. I had both Moderna and Pfizer, and I did fine. Others are going to get a response with every single one. But again, that's your body saying, hey, I just got something injected to me that I don't like, and I'm turning on my immune system. And when I do that, I'm going to get side effects. They're going to last 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
That should be reassuring to people.
The caller is saying it's day 3, and I am feeling better. So that's good news. Kevin, I hope you and your family have a wonderful Easter today. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital.
Take care, Dean. We'll talk soon.
Happy Passover. Andy, happy Passover to you.
Oh, thank you very much. I always wondered what Anu did. Everyone wanted him to die.
Is that a traditional joke around the Seder
table?
Well,
you know, you get your half off candy, I got my Dianu.
I thought I seemed to remember you telling that joke before.
I can't remember if I did or not.
This is a traditional Passover song.
Yes.
And this group, the Maccabees, they do some pretty cool, like, I guess you might say, like, interpretations of traditional songs. I imagine this Weird Al Yankovic interpretation of Dayenu, probably not the traditional one sung in most temples.
Not at all.
Yeah. I like that they are paying tribute to Weird Al Yankovic, though. So did you have a nice a Seder dinner? Explain to everybody how you celebrate.
Yeah, well, Seder means order. So there's an order that you eat. You go with a prayer book, and there's certain things on the plate, and then you tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt and why we're eating certain things on this night and not others. There's a segment called The Four Questions, where the youngest in the group asks the questions, and it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a real nice tradition.
I like that.
And we're actually doing ours tonight. We're doing a three time zone Zoom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my brother and sister-in-law, my nieces are in Denver, and myself and my fiance are here in Chicago, and my parents are still snowbirding.
Florida.
Yeah, so we're going to do that tonight.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's very, very, very nice. I like the four questions concept.
Yeah.
That could be a segment here on the show.
Well, we have to be careful of the questions, and then, of course, be careful of the answers. But yeah, it's interesting. It's trying to show things from the eyes of a child, wondering why certain things are happening today that don't happen other days of the year.
Yeah, like what would be an example of the questions that might be
well,
asked?
It's one of them is why do we eat matzah and not bread? Right. And then they tell the story about how there was not enough time for the bread to rise and they had to get out. So it's things of that nature that just questions about the holiday itself and why we.
So there are questions about the holiday.
There's four of them. So it's pretty cool. It's a nice tradition.
One of my questions would be, how delicious are the chocolate covered matzah?
You know, they're very good.
They're
extremely
fantastic.
Extremely good. I'm trying to watch myself these days. You know, I'm losing a little weight here for the wedding coming up, and as tempting as it is, I don't think I can do it.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little expensive on the diet.
Yeah, you have. You have a tremendous willpower with all that.
Yeah, it's willpower. It's this is a tough one because
you've got a lot riding on this.
Well, and not just that, but the holiday itself for a whole week. It's basically 8 days again, where you're not eating. It's basically it's a no carb diet. Basically, is what it turns out to be.
Right,
and it's tough. It's tough.
Is it all kosher food also during the 8 days?
Yeah, it's kosher for Passover. So a lot of really religious and observant Jews will. Trade out all the plates that they normally use during the year, and they will put them away somewhere, not in the cupboard, and use specific plates for this holiday.
Just for the holiday.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and I'm a big fan of tradition. I love that, and teaching the next generation so the traditions all stay alive.
Yeah, it's like I said, the Seder, if you haven't been to one, it's a really nice thing. I mean, it's an orderly dinner. There's certain there's a spot for the prayer, and then you eat and you come back and you do some festive songs and they have dessert. It's pretty cool.
Shwani, have you ever had the chocolate covered matzah?
I never have. As a matter of fact, this is the very first time I've heard of chocolate covered matzah.
Oh, really?
I did not know.
It's delicious.
I'll bet.
I'm a fan of matzah in particular. The different flavored, the onion flavor whatever, but the chocolate, oh, that's a dessert right there.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is.
That's a lovely dessert. And I'm a big fan of the coconut macaroons.
Macaroons, yeah. And I was looking last night to see if there were any of the little treats that are left at any of the Jewels or the Mariano's in town. They have a little kosher for Passover chocolate bars and jelly rings and fruit slices. They're all out there.
A couple of weeks ago, I was going to show how to make coconut macaroons on TV. And, so I was going to pre-make some at home. So I would, I would show the ingredients on TV, but then pull a tray out from underneath, saying, oh, look, the magic of television. And, they would be done. It was the biggest mess that I ever made. I don't know what I did to the recipe. It looked like somebody already ate the macaroons and spit them on the tray.
See, that's where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to go, you know, with a tray of them. There were supposed to be 12, and there were only six.
Well,
and, you
know,
they didn't make it on the way.
It looked like there were only one because everything melted together. It was, you know, there was like supposed to be like little scoops of macaroon, you know, coconut macaroon,
right?
Which I love. But I don't know what I did wrong. I was like, okay, maybe next year we'll do this next year. I got a year to try to figure this out because, man, did I ever mess that up. It was a mess. All right.
Well, the effort was there.
Hey, speaking of four questions, we have a new producer on the show. I don't know if you've noticed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have a brand new producer on the show. And his name is Jack Heinrich. And, Jack, welcome. Welcome to the show. Very nice to have you with us here now.
So you're telling me Ryan isn't coming back?
Did Ryan not tell you that he was?
Oh, boy.
Ryan didn't mention that you were here for good?
No, I didn't. That got lost. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you here. So I thought maybe you could go through the four question treatment.
That sounds good.
Here this morning. Shawnee, you have some questions for him?
Yes, I do.
Andy, I do. Just tell us a little about your background. I mean, you've been here at WGN for a while before being assigned, the privilege of being assigned to work with us here on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I got hired last June, so about 10 months, I think. No, I can't keep track of time, but 10 months, I think. It's been a blur.
Yeah, okay. And, like, what other shows have you worked on?
So I started doing the Karen Conti show on Sundays with Rick Kogan.
The show's a lot more fun than both of those, right?
It's a blast. I fill in with Bob Surratt a lot.
Yeah, our show's more fun than that one, too.
Yeah, there you go. And then I work with Blackhawk stuff, like producing, going to United Center.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's got to be fun.
Yeah, kind of all over the place.
Right.
Yeah.
So who do you, just based on that, who do you like better, me, Rick Kogan, or Karen Conti?
Oof. Probably you.
The correct answer is me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have taken that long.
Yeah, the correct. I'm taking points off for the delay. Shawnee, you're our next panelist.
Okay. I have several questions,
yes,
actually.
Yes, please. Go right ahead.
First off, we talk about a lot of old music here on the show.
Well, you do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you do, too. Can you name me the singer who sang Come Back When You Grow Up, Girl?
Oh, brother.
No.
Okay. All right. Answer is, I understand.
Have you ever even heard of that song before?
No. Bobby V.
Would you like to call one of your ancestors to see if they could? Would you like to call for an assist?
Here's one more question.
Did you say the answer to that question?
Yes, Bobby V.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Now, this is a multiple choice question.
Here's another question. Have you ever heard of Bobby V?
No, I haven't.
Oh. This is a multiple choice question.
Okay.
This has to do with the Andy Griffith Show. Now,
hang on. Have you ever even seen the Andy Griffith Show?
No, but I've heard of it.
Okay. All right. I'll pose the question
anyway.
Go ahead
and answer
that. As everybody knows, Barney had a long-standing girlfriend by the name of Thelma Lou. However, before Thelma Lou, there was another girlfriend. Was it A, Laura Lee Hobbs, B, Hilda May, or C, Agnes Drollhammer?
Oh, I don't even know that.
I think they teach you in school, if you don't know, you just guess C. So I'll guess C.
I don't know that. I thought Juanita.
Hilda May. Well, Juanita was, but there was an actual actress who played the character of Hilda May very early on, and somehow or other just left the show. Mm. Just kind of like Eleanor Donahue left the show there at the end of the first season.
The way that Jack wants to leave this show.
tough first impression.
Now, what would you say, what's like the oldest TV show that you can think of from your own memory?
I watched the Brady Bunch a lot when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good.
Yeah,
in reruns or prime time?
Reruns.
Oh, okay. You have to qualify that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess he wasn't born during the prime time run. Do you have more questions that he won't know, Shawnee?
No, I think I'll defer to Andy with this now.
Andy?
Jack, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Hoffman Estates in the northwest suburbs.
sports?
Yeah.
Play a little sports?
Yeah, I played basketball and baseball freshman year of high school. And then I got cut from basketball, so then that was kind of the end of that. Yeah.
Jack, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I like working in radio. Radio's pretty fun. Sports, radio, working with Dean.
Do you want to be on the air? See, there's the answer
On the air?
That's the answer I was looking for.
Eventually.
On the
air. Notice how he says how much he likes working with Dean?
Yeah, I'm trying.
You know what, Tronny? You cannot
trying to keep my job.
You cannot kiss up too much.
Of course not. Of course not.
Especially in the beginning weeks when I'm making, you know, we're learning about each other right now.
Exactly.
We're making our first impressions, and the more you can kiss up right now,
the better off you will be.
The better, more secure your position will be.
So that's why we've had a lot of producers just leave after 3 weeks.
Okay. You know what? I was thinking about that when you said that a few weeks ago. That we have not had that many producers slip through the show. Most of them are here 3-5 years, something like that.
3 or 5 years?
Yeah.
Well, how long was Ryan here?
Ryan was here for two.
Two? Yeah. Okay.
I broke him early. But I never made him cry. That's usually... I'm telling you right now, Jack, that's my goal with most producers. I'll try to make you cry the first 6 weeks.
Well, I've seen it happen.
We're like 4 weeks in.
I've seen it happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And I also get blamed for when they leave. did that with Joey Gelman.
Yeah.
And you said on the air, you said, he's had it with you.
Yeah, well, most of them do. Most of them come to me privately after saying, I would like to stay on the show, but I can't take Schwani anymore. Yeah, I'm not kidding. That's how it is. Jack has got...
I'm a nice guy, Jack.
I know you are.
Thank
we worked
you.
Together a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gone well.
I'm a nice guy, aren't I, Andy?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. You're fine. You're fine. You'll be fine.
Jessica's over there. Jessica, am I a nice guy?
Oh, brother. When you got to beg for it like this, Tony, that's so pathetic.
She said yes.
Somebody tell me they like me. Somebody say you like me.
Please be my friend.
That's why, Jack, that's why most people can't get along with Schwani.
Understood.
He's too clingy.
I see it.
He's too clingy. Jack has a really cool Bulls hat on this morning. So, I mean, but it's like loaded with patches and pins.
Yeah, it was like the draft hat from a couple years ago.
It was what now?
The draft hat, like when they draft
the player. Draft hat. Yeah.
It's got like the... Chicago flag, year they were founded.
Okay,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, shall we make you like what would be your specialty on the show? You know, Ryan was a musician; he brought certain talents and skills that nobody else had. What do you think would be your skills that you bring to the show?
Well, I'm not the magician Ryan was, but I did play the recorder in third grade.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that might be somewhere in my house.
Do you still have it?
Maybe. Okay. I think it's probably nasty by now.
You have to bring the recorder in.
All right.
And feed, I would love it. Schwani, Andy, how about it?
I'll bring in my trombone. We'll have a concert.
Yeah,
a
band.
Sure.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I'm a big
Andy, you're a
guy.
Good singer.
Oh, yeah, sure, in my own mind.
Yeah.
You sing all the time around here.
I have to do it here because Melina won't let me do it at home.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
my mom had a Hammond organ at our house that I had to learn to play when I was little. I can burn off a mean clarinet polka.
Nice.
There we go.
Yeah.
I played the saxophone for
Lady
4 days.
Lady of Spain for an encore?
Lady of Spain and Spanish Eyes.
Well, Spanish Eyes was the one. Yeah. Right.
With that a device on the machine that went.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Schwani is so weird. Okay, so we can look forward to a concert. This will be something for spring. Spring of 2022.
A recorder, trombone, and a Hammond organ.
Yeah.
What a combination.
Yeah, featuring clarinet polka. Clarinet polka and Spanish eyes.
And a little rhythm section.
Yeah, who says this show is dated? That'll never happen.
What brings you to Terra?
You vixen, you. Starlet,
I love you. That gown is gorgeous.
Thank you. I saw it in the window and I just couldn't resist it.
Maybe one of the most classic sketches on the Carol Burnett Show, the spoof of Gone with the Wind, called Went with the Wind, which Carol Burnett comes slowly down the stairs wearing the drapes with the curtain rods still in them, of course. They say was the longest recorded laugh ever in the history of the old Carol Burnett Show. Carol Burnett joins us after 11 o'clock this morning, full hour with Carol Burnett, talking about the one-woman show that she does that is coming to the Chicago Theater on Thursday, April the 28th. Tickets are still available for the show, in which she comes out and shows old clips of the show and gives you behind-the-scenes stories about what happened during the making of the legendary Carol Burnett variety show. And then she bumps up the lights, as she used to say, on the show, and takes unfiltered, unplanned questions from the audience. It's a great time. I've gone to a couple of these presentations that Carol puts on at different theaters around the Chicago area. It's just so much fun. It's very, very nostalgic, but just reminds you of an era of television that sadly we don't see anymore. She talks in this interview. I did the interview the other day, so it's recorded and we'll share it with you. But she talks and remembers Betty White, who was a part of the Carol Burnett Show. She talks about comedy today. There's so much talk about, you know, whether comedy goes too far and cancel culture and comedians altering their material to, to suit audiences, to placate audiences, which sometimes takes a lot of the edge out of comedy. She talks about what kind of comedy she likes now and what kind of comedians, that she likes now. She talks about being a role model for other comedians, other female comics and actresses who do comedy, much the same way that Lucille Ball was to her, and talks about her early encounters with Lucille Ball and was like. So I think we've got a really, really interesting conversation with the great Carol Burnett. And that'll be coming up after 11 o'clock this morning. Tell you what else we've got are some tickets to give away to see the group Air Supply. Their Lost in Love experience is going to be at the Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino on April the 30th. And we have a pair of tickets to give away for that show right now, as a matter of fact. You can buy tickets at Ticketmaster if you'd like to go see Air Supply, or you can win a pair right now at, let me see here. We're giving these away on right now, right? Okay, because it also says you can also enter to win a pair of tickets at WGNradio.com/contest. So a couple of ways to win. Go to the website, or if you get on the phone line right now, 312-981-7200, we will give a pair of tickets to caller number 7, a pair of tickets to see Air Supply at the Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds Casino, April the 30th. Caller 7 is our winner at 312-981-7200. Musical is called Six and has just opened at the CIBC Theater at 18 West Monroe in Chicago, and is the story of the six wives of Henry VIII. But as you can hear from this number from the show, very much 21st century, very much full of girl power in the show. And two of the six ladies of the show join us on the phone line right now. What a pleasure to welcome Jasmine Forsberg and also Gabriela Corillo. Ladies, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Thank Hi you. There. Good to be
Good
with
to
you.
Be here.
And I'm going to just go one by one here. But Gabriela, for you, This has got to be kind of special because you are born and raised in Chicago. Now to be performing, actually Downers Grove, I think, right? But
born in Downers Grove, raised in Palatine mostly, yeah.
Yeah, but now to be on stage in downtown, right in the heart of the theater district down there, has to mean something very special to you.
Very special, because I have so many memories of going down there to the various theaters and seeing shows with my parents. And Chicago is really where I fell in love with theater and where I started to aspire to be a theater performer. So it is a full circle moment to now be the one on that stage, hopefully inspiring kids out there in the audience. It's so special and so heartwarming.
Yeah, and Jasmine, I would imagine the case is similar for you, born in Arlington Heights.
Yes, quite similar.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was born in Arlington Heights, as you said, but I spent the first 6 years or so of my life in Lake Zurich, Illinois. And while I didn't necessarily, you know, grow up here for the remainder of that time, all of my family is still up here. Actually, while I'm in Chicago, I'm staying with my grandparents in Niles. So it's just a wonderful way of making up for lost time that I feel like I haven't gotten with them. And I'm excited, you know, on special holidays like this to be able to spend time with that family that I haven't seen in so long.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Really special.
They must be so proud of their little Jasmine, I'll bet, right?
We have that family group chat going strong, and it is so fun. Whenever an article comes out or whenever a news interview comes out like this, they're always like, Jasmine, that was so cool, so cool.
and Gabriella, for you, first-generation Mexican-American, your family has, you know, got to be going wild at the success that you've had.
Yeah, I think they're very, very proud of me, and it feels really good. My dad is an immigrant from Mexico. He's from Mexico City, and he and my mom have always just been so supportive of my dreams, even through the pandemic, you know, giving me those pep talks of theater is going to come back, entertainment will come back, and you got this. We are here to support you. You can do this. And to return to theater in Chicago with such an incredible show and having my parents at opening night, it's just such a triumph and a victory, and I can feel that my family's so proud of me, and that feels amazing.
I wonder what that's like. I mean, is it extra inspiring to know that your family is in your opening night audience? Jasmine, probably the same for you. I imagine you had your family there as well. Does it make you so nervous because the family's there? Which one?
I'll say I do get more nervous when my mom and my dad are watching, because they've seen me grow completely from, you know, the age of three when I started performing on stage. They've really seen the growth, but I know that they're so proud. But my grandparents actually were my opening night dates, and they haven't seen me perform live since I was 11. Aww. So that was a really, really big deal for me. Very special.
Yeah. Gabriella, what was it like during the pandemic? Everything shut down. Everybody was out of work. How did you sustain yourself and keep yourself edgy and fresh and, you know, all that, so when things did reopen, you'd be set to go?
Oh, my gosh. It was hard. I was alone at my apartment in Los Angeles, just me and my dog, for the whole pandemic. So it was already a lesson in how to be alone, which was sometimes I think performers especially struggle with that, but I think everybody did. And it was difficult not almost feeling like I had lost my sense of purpose because I wasn't performing. And so I had to rediscover who I really am outside of performing, what my purpose is besides performing, which I think is a really important lesson regardless, to have a more sustainable relationship with performing, knowing that you are a whole person outside of what you do. But I was fortunate enough to have, you know, I have a sizable following on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram. So that kind of gave me the platform to quote unquote perform, as it were. So I did a couple different funny video series on TikTok. I vlogged on YouTube. My whole quarantine experience is up on YouTube. So I did have that. Social media did allow me to connect with people during that period of isolation, and I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, I think that was a godsend for a lot of performers to stay connected with their audiences. But as I said, during the whole 2 years of the pandemic, creative people must create. They must. They are driven to do art, to do things.
Yes.
I think that was the case for almost everybody. Jasmine, was it similar for you?
It was similar, but in a different way. I actually, for the entire 2 years of the pandemic, I was still a student. I graduated from Penn State's musical theater program back in May. And so trying to find ways to motivate yourself when your entire program, which is normally supposed to be in person, when you're taking dance classes in your living room, it's a little bit different than when you're taking them in a dance studio. But trying to find those ways to stay motivated and being very scared to be going into an industry for the first time that was still, by summer of last year, kind of just starting to get on its feet again. And as we can see now, it's still ebbing and flowing as the pandemic continues to grow and evolve. But it was scary, but I also had such a support system with my professors. What was nice was that everybody was going through it together. It's not like anybody in this current world had gone through this before. So we were all in it together, and we all leaned on each other as a way of support.
Yeah, we were inventing ways to, you know, how do we do this? Because nobody had done all the things that we went through the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad things are up and running now, and it's an especially busy time down in the theater district where Six is playing at the CIBC Theater at 18 West Monroe. I want to talk about that with both of you when we come back. Gabriela Carrillo and Jasmine Forsberg with us from Six the Musical right after this. Six the Musical, playing at the CIBC Theater, 18 West Monroe through July the 3rd. Gabriela and Jasmine, Jasmine Forsberg, Gabriela Carrillo. I got to say, well, you know, you're both from the area, so you know, but you've chosen exactly the right time to come to Chicago, not in the dead of winter, you know, not when things are getting better. So it's got to be a little more pleasant for you, you know, when you're walking to the theater, whatever, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's been great having my little walks to the train. And then I just cannot wait for summer weather, because before evening shows, I am going to be down by the lake soaking up the sun.
See? Yeah. She knows how to enjoy Chicago. Nice.
I've been going on a few walks throughout Millennium Park and Maggie Daly Park on our breaks, because we have these excessively long breaks between two show days. And
right.
It's just been so lovely to enjoy the sun. And, oh, yes, I'm ready for summer, though. I am ready.
Yeah, very definitely. So talk to me about Six. I mentioned that it's the story of the six wives of Henry VIII, but really it's much deeper than that. Jasmine, how do you describe the show?
Well, I love to describe this show as, yes, the six wives, a story of the six wives of Henry VIII, who take on this role as an incredibly fierce pop girl group. And throughout that unique lens, they each get to tell their own story and reclaim their power throughout this 80-minute pop concert of sorts. And it is a very, very special, just like you said, girl power story to be a part of and to tell in this time period.
Yeah, your character, Jane Seymour, that you're playing in it, right?
Yes, Jane Seymour, the only one he truly loved.
Gabriela, how about you? How do you describe Six?
Yeah, I mean, it's the six wives of Henry VIII told in a way that you have definitely never seen before. And, you know, what I think is so cool about the way that this story is told is that it attracts people who may not have otherwise taken an interest. I mean, to be honest, I remember when I first heard about the show, somebody just told me, you need to be in the show. It's called Six. It's about the six wives of Henry VIII. And I was like, oh, well,
yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
A historical piece. I don't know. And then I realized the six wives were all pop stars and inspired by modern day pop stars. And I was like, okay, now I'm in. So I think that it marries history with pop music. And so the lens of who this show can appeal to is just so much wider for that. And I love it.
Talk to me a little bit about the feedback that you're getting from audiences, because I'll tell you what, since the show opened, I've heard from so many parents and from so many viewers and listeners who are young women themselves asking questions about the show, saying, I've got to see this. This sounds so empowering for young girls and young women. Is that the kind of feedback, Jasmine, that you're getting?
I think something that is so unique with this particular cast is that they're all six of the onstage queens are women of color. And so I've been hearing a lot from these audiences, and I've been getting Instagram DMs saying, wow, even from my seat far away, you looked Filipino. And so I looked you up, and it says on your website that you are. And like, that just means so much to me because I never see somebody who looks like me on stage. And so having that power, not only as a cast of diverse women, but just all women, period. And, mm-hmm. and a majority of our company backstage as well is all women. It's an experience that I've never had before. And it feels incredibly empowering for us on stage. So I hope people in the audience are also feeling that sense of power when they walk out of the audience as well.
Yeah. Gabriella, are you getting a similar feedback?
Absolutely. I'm getting little notes and messages of, you know, I see you when I see myself when I see you on stage, and, you know, Latinas represent, Mexicans on Broadway represent. And I mean, we also get to look at the audience during this show, which is something that is not usually done in theater traditionally. And we get to interact with the audience as if we were putting on a pop concert. And so to be able to see reactions on people's faces also is so rewarding, and I think that speaks volumes as well. Just they're smiling, they're clapping, they're bopping along, they're wiping tears away sometimes. You can see them really like thinking about what we're saying, and they seem really engaged and excited, which is wonderful to see, because that's exactly what we want.
It's kind of an extension, isn't it, the way that Lin-Manuel Miranda told the story of Alexander Hamilton in a very non-traditional way, this story of the six wives of Henry VIII being told in a very untraditional way, but, you know, in a way that really relates to a younger audience, not thinking that they're coming for a history lesson, but for a pop concert.
Yeah, I think this is a really quite genius way to teach about history. I think I would have probably gotten better grades on my AP European history test had there been musicals like this when I was in high school.
Yeah. Jasmine, how about you? What do you think?
I would say, I think you're hitting the nail on the head right there with how it connects to young people. And also what's so interesting is that Toby Marlowe and Lucy Moss, our writers, they based each of the six queens off of various different pop stars in our pop culture today. And so each song has its own different style element. And so maybe you vibe with one queen, but not the other, just because one queen was based off Beyonce and one was Avril Lavigne. But like, each queen has a different inspiration that takes on a different, like, edgy role within the musical sphere of this show. And so you're going to find your way in for sure. Very, whether it's all queens or just one of them.
Yeah. Very relatable one way or the other, and colorful and, fun. Six is playing at the CIBC Theater. It's at 18 West Monroe, and it'll be here in Chicago until July the 3rd. Ladies, I hope you have a great time here in Chicago, and I appreciate you joining me today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Jasmine Forsberg, Gabriella Carrillo. Extra good job on the newscast.
Why, thank you, Dean. That's the nicest thing you've said to me since 1981.
Drink.
Yes, take a drink.
We're starting a Sunday morning drinking game.
At the suggestion of a listener.
And have a drink because we're referring to something that happened 2 hours ago.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, so this is a double drink, double shots.
Make mine a double.
For this time. Especially good newscast considering you're wearing an Easter Bunny suit.
This is my usual newsroom attire.
Swirl that around your visual memories for a little while this morning. Abe Schwann with floppy ears this morning.
And big floppy feet.
Yep. And again, that's his usual attire, as he says. So when you think television legends, who do you think? I think Johnny Carson. I think Jackie Gleason. I think
Andy Griffith.
Jerry Seinfeld, all the current
Dick
ones.
Dick Van Dyke.
Like the cast from The Office. Dick Van Dyke is certainly on that list. Ed Sullivan would have to be on that list.
Yep.
I enjoy watching the old reruns of Ed Sullivan's show, and I watch specifically for one reason.
You mean they're old?
I watch not for the stars who are on the show. I watch for the guys spinning the plates.
Yeah.
And the acrobats and like the weird little acts that he had.
That are mixed in with the Rolling Stones and the Doors.
Right. And Ella Fitzgerald. He said Ella Fitzgerald and a trained bear. That was the Ed Sullivan show. But there are not too many performers or their bodies of work that is more legendary than this. This is the sign-off song for the legendary, legendary Carol Burnett show that ran on CBS from 1967 to 1978. A good old-fashioned variety show, and the first woman to host a variety show on television. In fact, when Carol Burnett was given this assignment, they thought it was going to be a summer replacement show and thought, woman's never done a show like this before. This is never going to work. And it became so enormously popular. This following her success on the old Gary Moore show, in which she was a supporting player and won her first Emmy Award from her work on the Gary Moore show. And before she appeared on Broadway and won a Tony Award nomination for her appearance in Once Upon a Mattress. Carol Burnett has gone on to just amazing, amazing success, especially on television through her Carol Burnett show that won 23 Emmy Awards. It's got to be some kind of record for a television program. But she would go on to motion picture success, Broadway success. She would win the Presidential Medal of Freedom, awarded by President George W. Bush, the Mark Twain Prize for American Comedy, the Kennedy Center Honors, and she was named to the Television Academy's Hall of Fame as well. Very, very deserving for just truly one of the great performers of all time, for which I was honored to be able to spend some time together. The other day, we ducked on the telephone because Carol is coming to Chicago next week. As a matter of fact, it's just 2 days after her birthday. She'll be at the Chicago Theater on Thursday, April 28th for this amazing show that she puts on that is a retrospective of her career in which she completely interacts with the audience. Tickets still available for that, by the way, at the Chicago Theater box office or through Ticketmaster outlets. But I asked Carol to describe a little bit, telling me about the show and kind of getting this thing up and running again, because the show had literally been delayed four times because of the pandemic.
Well, I just finished doing four shows earlier this month. And because it was 2 years for all of these venues that had been postponed. So the audience had held onto their tickets for 2 years. And this one woman raised her hand and she said, I bought two tickets 2 years ago from my 101-year-old mother. And I said, oh, that's so sweet. And she said, and we're here tonight. She was 103.
Holy smokes. Wow. That's amazing.
I'm expecting her to say, oh, and she passed away, you know, and all.
Right.
She's still there at 103. Right. And she stood up and took a bow. The audience went crazy.
How about that? Well, you know, those Carol Burnett Show fans, they're loyal. They're when they have tickets, they're not going to go anywhere.
I guess not. But
what kind of
really.
Yeah. That's amazing. What kind of reception, Carol, have you been getting now that you're back on the road and doing these shows around the country? I would think that after the pandemic and all that the world has been going through and is going through, a night of comedy with a longtime friend has got to be such a welcome event in their lives.
The audiences, they've been wonderful. And pretty much the way they have always been, except with the exception that now I'm getting the age group now goes from maybe 7 years old up to 99 or 103.
103. We now can verify 103, right? Yeah.
Well, not too long ago, I was doing one of these, and it's really laughter and reflection where the audience asks the question. So it's a Q&A, so I don't do stand-up because the audience is my partner. And so this one time I called on this little boy, it's all random. And he raised his hand and I said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Andrew." And I said, "How old are you, Andrew?" And he said, 9. And I said, "And you know who I am?" And there was a pause and he said, "Surprisingly, yes."
That's amazing. It's amazing, but it's not really amazing to me because your show, your comedy is really, it's timeless.
Well, thank you. It's funny is funny, and we very seldom were topical. We didn't do that much about what was going on with the news or anything. We just, we were a throwback to vaudeville. We wanted to just do funny shows. And I dare anybody to look at Tim and Harvey doing the dentist sketch and not lose it, because it's one of the funniest bits of comedy ever. And that's over 45 years old.
Yeah. It's amazing. I was watching a rerun the other day, and it was a sketch that you had all done, which you and Tim were husband and wife, Tim Conway. Lyle Wagner was a veterinarian who was supposed to give a little dog an injection, but instead accidentally gives it to Tim Conway, and he takes on the attributes of a dog. Right. I mean, that's the premise, and take it from there with you and Tim Conway. I was crying laughing, even though I had seen it a million times.
Of course, it was he really he nailed it, and lots of times we would tape two shows on a Friday in front of two different audiences. The first show was what we call the dress rehearsal, but we taped it. And Tim would do the sketches the way we'd rehearse them, as we used to say, to the ink. And then on the second show, once he knew that the first show had been taped and it's in the can for safety, then he would go off script. And we would let him. I would let him, because it was pure gold. And I would say 90% of the time we would use what he did on the second show. He could go all this. There might be a 4-minute sketch, and he would stretch it to 8 minutes. We would keep it in, and that was people waited for him to do that. They looked forward to it, and I learned something many years ago when I was what we call a second banana on the old Gary Moore show. I don't know how many of your listeners remember that.
Yeah. But I remember it fondly.
Garrett would, his name was, he was a star, but Durward Kirby was a second banana, and I was, and Marion Lorne, and we would be reading the script on a Monday, and Gary might have a joke or a punchline or something, and he'd look up, and he'd say, give this joke to Durward or give it to Carol. They can say it funnier than I can.
I think about that when I watch your old shows, even though it's your name on the show, how generous you were letting everyone around you be funny. Yeah.
Right. Well, that only makes the show better. I always, my name was on it, but it was a true rep company. There was many times I would be supporting Harvey or Vicky, or then Vicky would be supporting Tim, or Tim would be supporting Harvey. And that only made the show better because I wanted everybody to score a touchdown. And they did. We would turn it over. I would let Vicki have it, you know, have the brunt of the thing, and Tim and Harvey, and then they would support me. So it was a true rep company.
Yeah, and you know, which kind of also brings me to the subject of what an enormous undertaking putting on the Carol Burnett Show must have been every week. With, I mean, it was like a different Broadway show every single week with the musical numbers and the costumes and this array of guests that you had, you know, coming on the program. There is nothing like it anymore.
No, it's too bad. Well, actually, you know, I wanted that. I wanted it to be a musical comedy review every week. And we also, most of us coming from live television, I didn't want the live studio audience sitting there for hours while we took our time changing clothes or scenery or anything. I was adamant about doing it as close to being a live show as possible. And so it went with, by doing that, our studio audience was there maybe for 2 hours at the most. So that would be the time you would spend watching a Broadway show. And I remember I used to bet the crew that I could do a skin out costume change faster than they could move a couch across the stage. Because I've done some guest shots on sitcoms that, you know, it's maybe 21 minute, 22 minutes of actual show, and it take maybe 4 or 5 hours to do it. Well, that's crazy. What are they doing, making a movie? I mean, when I worked with Lucy, you know, when she had not I Love Lucy, but the later shows, she did it just like a live show. We'd be out of there once we started taping in front of an audience. We'd be out of there no later than maybe 30 or 40 minutes. We'd be gone, you know, and it was done. It was in the can, and it had that live spontaneity. The audience wasn't bored. Right. You know, and that's the way we did my show.
Yeah, she talks more about her mentor, Lucille Ball, as we continue this morning with Carol Burnett. Spending all hour one-on-one with Carol Burnett. This is Carol and her mentor, Lucille Ball, who helped her along the way in our conversation. Carol told me about the first time that she met the great Lucille Ball.
Lucy was a mentor, I remember. The first time I met her, I was in an off-Broadway show called Once Upon a Mattress, and she came to see me in the show. I was more nervous knowing she was in the audience than I was opening night with all the critics, you know. And she came backstage, and she called me. She was 22 years older than me, and she said, "Kid, if you ever need me for anything, give me a call." So about four or five years later, I was doing well, and CBS had offered me an hour-long special if I could get a major guest star. And the producer said, "Well, you got to call Lucy." And I was embarrassed. I said, "Well, I don't want to bother her." And, you know, he said, "Well, all she can do is say no." You know, she did say, "Give me a call if you ever need me." So I got up the nerve, and I called her office. She came on the phone right away. "Hey, kid, you're doing great. What's happening?" And I flumpered around, and I was nervous and stuttering and everything. And I said, "Well, I know you're busy," but then she said, "What is it?" And I said, I'm going to be doing this special for CBS." And she interrupted me, and she said, "When do you need me?" That was it.
Wow. And now it's interesting to watch people like Amy Poehler and Jane Lynch and this whole generation of actresses, comedic actresses, who worship you in the same way, deservedly so. That must be gratifying to you.
Well, it's very sweet. And what's nice, I'm just thrilled that so many women have their own production companies, and they're writers, and they're the head of of their company, and they're running it, and they've pretty much, not quite yet, but shattered the glass ceiling. I mean, when I think of Amy and Tina Fey, and of course, how brilliant are some of these other women, Kristen Wiig, and Maya Rudolph, Jane, all of them. And when I got my start, there weren't that many women.
Right.
There was Lucy, there was Imogene Coca, but and I'm kind of lost at the, and then later Nanette Fabre, who was great with Sid Caesar.
So many of these actresses that you list say that they decided they wanted to do it because they watched the Carol Burnett Show every week.
I'm very flattered about that, but what I say to that is, if I'd never been born, they'd be doing what they're doing. Talent will out. They will have found And then my idol at one point was Sid Caesar, because I loved the way he did his show with the sketches, and he did have musical numbers, and he had different characters that he would do, and he had a rep company, with Carl Reiner and Howie Morris and Imogene and so forth. So in a way, and I patterned my show after him, and also I have to say Gary Moore. But I don't know. If they had never existed, maybe I would be doing something different, but I know I would be working at something. I know that. And I know these ladies, these women would be doing what they're doing, too.
The legendary Carol Burnett, her Evening of Laughter and Reflection, is at the Chicago Theater on April the 28th. Can't wait. We'll be back and talk more with Carol in just a moment.
Wait. What? Come on, Adler!
Back with Carol Burnett on 720 WGN. Carol, we had on our WGN TV morning news a couple of weeks ago, three of the Jackson 5, I believe it was Randy, Tito, and Jermaine, who were on with us. We showed the clip of when they were guests on your show, when an earthquake hit, and you were in the middle of a sketch, and the earthquake hit. What do you remember from that?
Well, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I remember the audience went, ooh, and there was a reaction, and you could see the reaction of people on, the Jackson 5, and also some of our other dancers when we were doing the thing where I was a school teacher. And I kept going, and I said something like, "You see what happens when you don't pay attention? The earth moves." Or I said something like that. but we kept going.
Cracked everybody up and just kept right on going, like the pro that you were. they remembered it fondly as well. Remembered. What a great week that was for them, and talk to me about the kindness that you showed them, how nice you were behind the scenes to them during that week in which they were featured on your show.
Oh, they were they were terrific, and I'm very flattered by that compliment, but. Why not be nice? I mean, again, one of the nicest people I ever knew in my life was Gary Moore, working with him and how he conducted himself around people in the show. But it wasn't just being nice, because you had a show. He was nice off camera, too. And why not be nice?
Right. It seems funny to get a special accolade for doing something so normal, right? But you had such an array of guests on your show. Are there ones that stood out in your mind? I know you had Jim Nabors on the show all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was a tradition for him to help kick off your seasons. But who were some of the other special guests with whom you were so happy to work?
The first person we ever signed, she wasn't on the first show, but she was the first person asked to be on the show, and it hadn't started yet, was Bernadette Peters. She was 19 or 20 at the time, and we had Bernadette on quite often. Another favorite was Steve Lawrence, because not only could he sing up a storm, he was hysterically funny in all the sketches. He was a brilliant comedic actor. I remember when our show went into syndication, and it was been just a half hour, and all the musical numbers had been cut. So it was just a half hour of the sketches. And Steve said that he and his wife, Edie Gourmet, were in an airport one day, and these teenage girls ran up to him and said, "Hey, you're that funny guy in the Burnett show." they didn't realize that he could sing, you know, that he was a singer. Another one was Ken Berry. Ken Berry was a brilliant comedian, and hello, one of the greatest song and dance men you'd ever want to meet. I remember when we did a takeoff on a Fred and Ginger movie, and he was acting like Fred Astaire. He was absolutely brilliant, and we heard from Fred Astaire complimenting Ken Berry on his dancing and singing and acting.
Talk to me a little bit about what qualities you thought Betty White exhibited for the world. You know, in her passing this past New Year's Eve, everybody, talk about somebody who had appeal from age 7 to 103. Everybody loved Betty White. What are those qualities that she had that made her so beloved her entire career, do you think?
I don't know. She exuded kindness, and she was bawdy, you know, which in a very, how can you say it, bawdy in a clean way? You just loved it when she would come on to the guys. You know, she was so funny that way. And she had great comedy chops. You know, when you think of her at first on Mary's show, the Golden Girls, and doing our show, she was always funny. And I don't know, there are people, when you see them on the screen, you feel like you know them. And I think people felt like they knew Betty.
The Evening of Laughter and a Reflection is going to be at the Chicago Theater on April the 28th. Now, I've gone to a couple of these shows that you've done here in Chicago where it's just you on the stage.
I open with showing about 7 minutes of some of my favorite Q&As from my show, so that the audience in theater gets the idea. And then there are no planted questions at all. I play without, I go without a net, because I want it to be honest. And that's what I used to do on my show. And so I come out, and we bump up the lights, and there are ushers with flashlights so that I can see, and they turn the flashlights on, and they have microphones. And then I'll just point to a flashlight over here or one up in the balcony or whatever, and somebody will have a question. And I answer it as best I can, hoping that, you know, it's a fun question that I can answer.
Tickets are still available for Carol Burnett at the Chicago Theater Thursday, April 28th. We have more with Carol Burnett coming up next from the Chicago Theater. That's where Carol Burnett will be on April the 28th. Not this Thursday, a week from Thursday, the 28th. Tickets are available at the Chicago Theater box office or through Ticketmaster for this very, very warm and nostalgic night with one of the great TV legends. A show, by the way, that has been scheduled 4 different times and postponed because of the pandemic for the last 4 years. One of the things I talked to Carol about is what she did during her time during the pandemic.
Well, I live in Santa Barbara, and my husband and I have a home here. And, you know, we had a little kind of a Zen garden on our property. So we were able to have people come over, and we'd be outside, and they'd be more than 6 feet away. So we could visit with our neighbors. And we would visit. We would have maybe a cocktail and some hors d'oeuvres and everything, you know, and just sit and, when the weather was right, you know, because we didn't go inside with anybody. And we keep busy with our crossword puzzles. I watched a lot of movies. And we'd go for walks, you know, around the neighborhood. And that was it, you know. And so in a way, it was just kind of going away on a vacation, but you're in your own home.
Right. And you didn't know when the vacation was going to end.
Right. We have a pet that we love. And so, you know, but again, we would see friends. And but it would be, as I say, outside and, you know, just distancing. So, but we could visit, you know, and that was good. That helped us.
And safely, of course.
I just have to say, recently, I just got the fourth vaccination. I got the booster.
Oh, good. Very good.
The latest. Good. Yeah, the latest booster. I just got it last Friday.
Latest and greatest, yeah. So you'll be coming into the Chicago Theater fully vaxxed and boosted.
Absolutely. And what I do, too, just before I leave, I test, you know, to make sure that I'm negative, you know, to make sure all of that. And all the people around me, my stage manager, you know, they test, too, and they're vaxxed. So we're still very, very careful.
I wonder if during the pandemic, you know, you were being approached about new projects, working on new projects. Are there things that are going to be coming up that in which we'll see Carol Burnett starring?
Well, there is, but I'm sworn to secrecy. I did a guest shot on a television series, and it will be on soon, but I was, like, nobody wanted me to say what I was doing, so I can't say.
I understand.
But I had a great time. Yeah.
I understand. It's one of those things, ladies and gentlemen, that if she told me, she'd have to kill me. So, you know, we'll just leave it. We'll just keep our ears peeled for...
No, I would be willing to tell, but the producers, they say, please don't say anything. So,
no, I understand. Anyway. I completely understand. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that we'll be seeing you in something, whatever it is, and we'll learn about that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, it's not really the kind of comedy that you do, but I wonder, as just an observer of comedy through the years, comedy has just really come under fire lately for the kind of material that some comedians do that gets a bad reaction, the kind of reaction that it's getting, in which some people go up on stages if they don't like what the comedian's saying. Some comedians get fired, you know, in this cancel culture world in which we're living. Is this a tough time to be a comedian, do you think?
Well, I'm not one of those. I'm not a stand-up, so I don't do that. But I think it's terrible that comedians, I remember Don Rickles, my goodness, that was his whole act, was insulting, and people, you know, okay, don't take it so seriously. That's my view, you know. Yeah. And so I feel sorry for the stand-ups who are worried now, if they say something, is somebody going to shoot them? You know, what's going on here? It's crazy.
Right.
It's absolutely
or
crazy.
lose their jobs and not get bookings. They dumb down their comedy to, you know, to make it you know, more generic, and I just feel like comedy suffers as a result, because comedians have always pushed the envelope.
We're talking about stand-up, but then you think, you know, about edgy, you know, for sitcoms or this and that. For that, I'm not for it when they get too edgy, because so many times you think that one of these sitcoms is written by teenage boys in a locker room.
Yeah.
And, you know, scatological for no good reason except to get a laugh. When you look at it today, you look at All in the Family, look at Dick Van Dyke's show, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, those were classy shows and funny as hell. And they didn't have, they didn't stoop to being, quote, edgy, edgy, edgy. You know, I like edgy if it's for a good, if it's really funny. But to be just gratuitous, I'm just bored with it, and I don't watch it.
It's just such an interesting time, I think, to be a comedian. And I think that's part of why it's so warm and wonderful. It's like a big hug when you go to see Carol Burnett in an evening of laughter and reflection. We're lucky to have it at the Grand Chicago Theater. It's going to be April the 28th, and tickets, some tickets are still available if you go to the box office. Or if you go to Ticketmaster.com, you can be part of this very special evening. I cannot even tell you, Carol, how much I'm looking forward to that evening and how much I always love when we can spend a little time together. I'm so glad we have this time together, if I may borrow a phrase. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you, too. Thank you, Dean.
Carol, have a great day. Okay. Thank you again.
You too, dear. Bye-bye.
He likes 60, 70 degrees.
And toward 80 by the maybe this time next week. Yeah, I'll take it.
That's going to be very
nice. I'll take it. I got a text from a very, very close dear friend who lives in the D.C. area earlier this week. It was 87 there.
Nice.
And our far-flung forecast, Hialeah, Florida, 85 today.
And if you're playing the Sunday morning drinking game, when we
take a drink,
when we refer to things that happened 2 hours ago, you have no idea what we're talking about. Take a drink. It's one of our many topics. We'll post. We should post a list, right?
Oh yeah.
Of what? Yeah. You know, if you want to participate in the drinking game, of when I make fun of Schwani, take a drink. When Schwani refers to make some obscure '60s reference, take a drink. You know, we had a bunch of things that we said early in the show. Take a drink. Somebody texted earlier and said that they were drunk by 9:30 on the show today.
I'm surprised it took that long.
Took that long. Exactly right.
As often as we were saying that between 9:05 and 9:30.
we are creatures of habit on this show. I was very interested in your story about the scents. In the grocery
I could tell
stores.
By the look on your face watching our official closed circuit TV system here. You looked deep in thought.
Do we have an official closed circuit TV system?
Yes, I'm looking at you right now.
Well, I'm looking at you too.
You don't want to look at me though.
Here's
I know
looking
that.
He's looking, at,
looking
you,
at you, kid.
He's looking at you. Well, I was fascinated by that story.
It is fascinating. Yes,
it's because it is very powerful. Bob Kessler in the story talked about new car smell. But, you know, you've already bought the car when you get the new car smell. But you know what I think of is when you walk by, like, the cookie stores, bakeries, they purposely pump out the smell of cookies and things out into the street to draw you in.
You in, of course.
Garrett,
yeah.
I was told that Garrett's popcorn.
I was just thinking about Garrett's popcorn.
Does the same thing when you walk by, you smell all that and you're like, must have popcorn. Must have cheese and caramel popcorn.
Which is why the line is out the door there.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting concept.
It is an interesting concept.
And very interesting that was cream cheese.
They'll see how effective it is moving boxes of cream cheese.
Not something that would
as they consider
to me.
A national rollout. The smells of baked sugar and vanilla pumped in by a diffuser part of a rolling refrigerated case stocked with Kraft's Philadelphia cream cheese and decorated for Easter.
I would have not thought of that as an like an enticing aroma.
Oh, I would think it would be.
I don't know.
But they know that, you know, what you just mentioned about cookies and Garrett's popcorn, that works.
I guess so.
So they're going to try it with this.
What's it going to be like when we go to the grocery store and they're pumping smells at us everywhere we turn? I'm not going to want to go down the toilet paper aisle, I'll tell you that much. I'm staying away from the dog food section. There's a lot of parts of the store I don't want to go in anymore.
You'll have to wear your coat instead of wearing it over the basket.
I'm going to have to start wearing a gas mask when I go to the store. I have to wear my beekeeper suit that I wore during the pandemic.
Let's take a drink, everybody.
Oh, somebody on the text line says the Jewel pumps out fried chicken smell.
Well, they sell a lot of that. You know, you walk down the aisle there in the deli section.
I don't know if you can really avoid this.
The smell of fried chicken.
Well, and the whole section where they're preparing the food.
Right.
It smells like whatever food they're preparing. I don't know if specifically if they have a fan pushing the fried chicken smell out. You can't avoid smelling the fried chicken when you go by there.
No.
But it's very interesting. So this is very interesting on our text line. We got a lot of sleuths out there. Somebody said that the old Maurice Linnell factory used to do that. You know Maurice Linnell cookies?
Sure. Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
I don't know. Well, were they actually? Was it part of the process of making the cookies instead of like an artificially induced thing?
I would think that that's probably, like, you know, if you're baking cookies, how does your place not smell like
right? Oh yeah,
cookies.
Right.
I don't think Maurice Linnell himself was in the back
with a big thing of bellows,
with a big fan of bellows,
pumping it out of the window.
Yeah, I have to get that cookie smell out into the street. Otherwise, I'll go into financial pummel. That's how I imagine Maurice Linnell sounding. 219 area code. I swear that Cinnabon at the mall does the same thing. I've heard that. I have heard that too. I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that those the cookie and like places like Cinnabon, the places that sell pastries and things that, you know, they pump the smell out. Try to use that phrase at your Easter dinner table today, by the way. Hey, who's pumping that smell out? Uncle Johnny.
Take a drink, everybody.
630 area code said, cream cheese. Just bought two packages this morning, two for $5 at the Jewels. If you want me to buy cream cheese, don't make me pay twice as much as I did last year. Well, see, that's a very good point as well. 773 area code. Being a kid from Chicago, the smell of the Butterscotch Company on Irving Park Road used to be very enticing.
That would be enticing.
What's that chocolate place that's over on Kinsey? I forget what that's called.
Boy, if you go by there on a certain time of day or in a certain type of weather, you
the whole neighborhood
really
smells
get the
like
whole
chocolate.
Neighborhood. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory in there because nobody I know has ever been inside the chocolate factory. I think it's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. And when you go inside, Willy Wonka's there. 773 area code, the smoke from barbecue restaurant always does the trick. Yeah, of course it does.
Mm-hmm.
630 area code. Wow, man, have we touched on a subject here. When I drove a messenger service in the city, I always enjoyed the ethnic smells as I drove around the ribs, the Walmart chocolate, the different bakeries, and the Toronto bread. Oh, the Toronto
bread. The bread
factory.
Would smell great, yeah. It
smells fantastic.
Yep.
And I would always have to get ribs and chocolate for lunch that day.
What about going into a good deli? You can smell the cured meats.
Cured meats, the pickles,
mm-hmm.
The good smell of the pickles.
Yep, yep. Likewise, a good bakery. I can think of a couple of favorite bakeries that I know over in Michigan where you walk in and you're just inundated by, you know, because everything is made right there.
Yeah.
And you cannot walk out of there without buying something.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because of the smell.
Because of the stink.
The aroma,
Of the stink of it all. but this is going to be generated by a machine in the Jewels?
Yeah. Yeah. Some stores, didn't say all, some will be having the aroma of freshly baked cheesecake pumped in in order to help the sales of cream cheese.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
The impulse buying. You know, how often have you gone to the store just to get like one thing and you wind up with five bags of stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Because like, oh, those look good.
Yeah.
Oh, fresh strawberries. Oh, fresh strawberries. How about the smell of fresh strawberries?
Love them.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, I got to get some of those. Oh, those look beautiful. I got to get this. Now, if you've got a different smell in every aisle, it's going to be, let me open up the phone lines because our text line's going crazy with this. 312-981-7200. What are the smells that entice you when you go shopping? I know I've fallen victim to it. 312-981-7200 here. 1220, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Getting into our food time show in a couple of minutes here. Easter special recipes today. Some follow-up on my tailgating recipes from last week that we talked about. But very interesting. The little news story that Schwani had has kind of set off the text line and the phones of the smells that you notice when you're shopping to entice you to buy certain products. What are the smells that entice you? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Barbara, sniff away. You're on WGN.
Hi. I just want to share some memories with you. I lived in the Marquette Park area years ago, and down the street was General Foods, where they made the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
And then also later on, they made like barbecue sauce and so forth and so on. And sometimes you would go outside and you'd smell it and you'd say, wow, am I starving? Then you would go a little further west to Nabisco on 73rd and Kedzie, and they would be baking Oreo cookies. Oh, my God. Sometimes when you went outside in that neighborhood, you were hungry.
You'd
all
be
the
so
time.
Hungry, right?
But it was very, very nice. Nostalgic, you know, and I wish those days were back.
Yeah, I remember what was it? There was a bakery, where they made bread. Was it like Wholesome Bread?
Yeah, there were a few of them down a little further north,
yeah,
and you could smell that. Like Ritina rye bread down on in the back of the Yards neighborhood when I was a little girl. My mother would take me shopping. Oh, my God, even as a little kid, that Ritina rye bread was out of this world.
Yeah, I remember on the Garfield Boulevard, which is like it's like 55th Street just east of the expressway. I think it was Wholesome Bread. Maybe it was Wonder Bread.
It could have been.
I don't remember, but when you drove by there, the smell of fresh-baked bread.
Oh, it was delicious.
Yeah, there is no better smell in the world than fresh.
I know. So those things really impressed me. But, I've lived to be 85 years old, so I still remember it.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah, but I just wanted to share that with you. I mean, Nabisco, I wish they'd come back with that stuff, but I'm not living there anymore, so I don't think I'd smell it unless I went through the neighborhood.
Yeah, wasn't there a Nabisco on Cicero? I mean, I grew up on the South Side, so I remember a lot of these South Side smells.
Yeah, it was on 73rd and Kedzie.
Was it Kedzie? Okay,
yes,
yeah.
Right next door was a
you kind of go up a hill a little bit.
Yeah, Nabisco Hill, we called
Nabisco
it.
Nabisco Hill, yeah.
And yeah,
you would smell, you know, whatever was going on there. And then,
oh, it was delicious.
And
you know,
then you'd want to
hub.
Yeah, you'd want to go to the grocery store and get some, you know, whatever. There.
Yeah,
they
all these little mom-and-pop stores, and they were cooking in the back and cooking this and that and trying to, you know, sell things. And you could sample it and the smell when you went in the store.
Sure.
Some people ate their lunch there,
right,
you know.
Right.
It was really exciting.
A lot of people.
At that time, I mean, I really enjoyed it.
A lot of people on the phone line are talking about the chicken, the fried chicken at
oh,
Jewel.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing.
Yeah.
When they came out with that Kentucky Fried Chicken and Chicken Unlimited, and you name it. And boy, when you went in some neighborhoods, that chicken was frying. Oh, it was delicious.
Yeah, somebody.
I remember my dad used to make a special stop when he got overtime or something, and he'd pick up shrimp or chicken. Oh, that was a treat.
Yeah,
that was a treat.
Probably.
But it's wonderful memories, wonderful.
It was, yeah.
And I enjoy your show so much.
I appreciate it, Barbara. Thank you for the call. Have a great day and happy Easter to you. A lot of people are remembering the smells that they, you know, when they're in a grocery store. Somebody, I've noticed this a million times at Navy Pier. Somebody texted in the cinnamon almond nuts. At Navy Pier, I think it's just a tiny little store, but how do you mess with cinnamon, the smell of cinnamon and almonds? And, you know, they bake them up with those almonds. They smell delicious. I bought them a couple of times when I used to go see movies there at the IMAX theater. I would, you know, you get a little sniff of that and you wind up buying. Or there was a Garrett's Popcorn. I think there still is in Navy Pier. You smell that Garrett's Popcorn and you're hooked. It's like it hooks you in every day. Somebody reminding me that on 55th Street, it was Silver Cup bread that I was remember smelling. But yeah, these are, you know, the smells that are, you know, part of the neighborhoods, part of the fabric of the city, but entice us in to buy their products. You know, somebody is, let me see here. Somebody is saying, you know, without the fans, without the exhaust fans at the Jewels, then they would, you know, the store would get all smoky. So they have to pump it all outside. Somebody else, by the way, texting in, Mr. Richards, the name of the store to which you have made several references is Jewel, not Jewels. Work on it. Thank you. Thank you for your correction. And you get a sense of humor. We're clearly joking about it. welcome to my world, ladies and gentlemen. It's like people that feel like they have to just chime in on silly things like that. And I'm going to still call it Jewels, by the way. So you should make whatever correction you need to. 312 area code says the frangos were made at the old Fields. That smell was amazing. You know what? I was at the Marshall Fields. I know it's called Macy's now, but I'm doing it just to make that person who texted me about the Jewels mad. I was shopping for some other things, but I walked by the Frango section. Oh, man, that smell grabbed me. Guess who walked out buying two boxes of Frangos that I'm allegedly going to be giving as gifts to other people? I had no intention of buying Frangos that day, but the smell that got me. Here is Lee. You're on WGN.
Hi. We lived in Roseland, and if you were anywhere on Cottage Grove, you could smell the Jay's Potato Chip Factory.
Oh, my gosh. No kidding.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. And if you went up to they had a little gateway there where you could, I don't remember exactly now because I'm old, but you could go up there and you could buy get the broken ones almost free.
I did not know that, but I do remember being in that area and smelling the fresh chips. There was a Jay's Potato Chips place I think it was in the Roseland area.
That's right. It was right off of Cottage Grove. Actually, if you're driving, right off the Dan Ryan, you could see it just west of the Dan Ryan there, the old factory where it was.
I remember it well because the reason I would go, I lived not far from there, but that's where you go to get your driver's license, get your driver's license renewed. The Secretary of State's office was just right around the corner from there.
Exactly. And you'd just be going down the street and there it would be.
So do you think that you would be, if you're in the grocery store, do you think that you would be affected if you're going down the aisle and you smell a certain smell and you go, ooh, I think I want to buy some of that?
Not always, but I do say that when we go to the store, I can smell the fried chicken. And I always think, oh, fried chicken.
Yum.
But I know, but I try to stay away from that if I can.
Yeah, I understand.
It's hard.
I understand.
It's hard, but the Jay's Potato Chip Factory, I remember that. Also, on 103rd, and I think it was LaSalle on that corner, years ago when I was growing up, there used to be a butternut cookie factory. And you could smell the cookies, and if you went and knocked on the back door, they'd give you the broken ones.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. I love stuff like that. 312 area code, driving past Ferrara Pan on the Eisenhower Expressway and smelling the Red Hots is wonderful there.
I don't know if I'd notice that, but yeah, it was really something. But we'd be driving, going someplace because my aunt lived over in South Shore, and we'd drive down Stony Island and smell the Jay's potato chips.
Smell those good old Jays. I'm glad you called today. I hope you have a nice Easter, Lee. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, Steve. You're on WGN.
Hey, good morning, Dean.
Hey, buddy.
Your conversation just immediately took me back to when I was growing up. We lived on the border of Lombard and Villa Park. And when the wind would blow out of the east, the smell of the Ovaltine factory in Villa Park filled the air with chocolate, and I can taste it right now.
Now I can, too, thanks to you.
Oh, my God. It's been so long. I haven't thought about that. And then there was another one. It was in West Chicago. It was the General Mills facility. Mm-hmm. And when you drove by there, you could the cereal smell. You know, all the fruity cereal smells from there.
Yeah, and kind of the
wonderful
baked,
memories.
The baked, you know, when they're actually baking the whatever, the wheat or you know, whatever they used to make cereal. But I remember those smells.
The Ovaltine one is definitely the winner for me.
I guess we are really affected. I think the Jewels must really be onto something.
I think so,
to put these smells in the aisles to entice us to buy things. Our phones and text line exploded with, people, with these memories of the odors that entice us. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Hope you have a great day.
Thank you. I love your show, Dean.
Thanks, buddy. Happy Easter to you. Thank you so much for the call.
Sausage and mustard.
It's 12:38. And this is Dean Richards. Thank you for being here with us on this Easter Sunday. You have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. Happy Passover. You're celebrating. Happy Ramadan. You are celebrating. Next week is the Eastern Orthodox Easter, Greek Easter, in my family's case. I'm celebrating both. Going to families today for American Easter, as we call it. Because why not have as much good food as you possibly can 2 weeks in a row? And then next week we'll do something a little more traditional, Greek-y style. This coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment, I'm going to be doing a Greek spanakopita. I've never done that on TV before. That's going to be, it's a little bit tricky. I think we've got it down to, you know, fairly simple step-by-step process that I think most anybody can do. You know, that's the spinach and feta cheese pie with, leaves of phyllo dough. Really delicious. And it's something that would be served at a Greek Easter table, which would be the following Sunday. So if you're interested, keep an eye out for that next Wednesday on the WGN-TV Morning News. Let's get into our Food Time show here for radio today. Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show, going strong all these years with cookbook authors and ideas. And today, normally on Easter Sunday, I just like to open up the phone lines for if you have questions. You know, if you're in the middle of preparing Easter dinner, getting ready to, you know, serve an Easter brunch and you've run into a question, something that you're wondering about, oftentimes we've been able to help people with last-minute emergencies. So phone lines are open for that, 312-981-7200, or really any kind of, you know, culinary questions that you may have. I'll do my best to answer your questions for you. I've got my recipe for the Easter ham. It's the best Easter ham recipe that I've ever had. I love it. And it's so super, super easy. And I realize that, you know, for many of you, you're probably hours away from your guests coming over. Might be a little late in the game to go run out to the store to get an Easter ham and get it prepared in time. But I'm going to share the recipe with you in a couple of minutes. As I say, I'm going to take your questions, text line or on the phone, 312-981-7200. Last minute Easter brunch, dinner, culinary questions that you may have. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to follow up on something that we did last week. On TV this past, was it Tuesday, I think? Yeah, Tuesday. I was tailgating outside of Guaranteed Rate Field because it was the home opener that day. And, you know, you can tailgate at the White Sox parking lots. So we went out there with a Weber Traveler grill. Have you seen these things? They're little foldable, little mini grills that are fantastic for tailgating. Thank you to Weber. Thank you to your Chicagoland Ace Hardware stores, where you can buy these little traveler grills. I love these. You just you screw on a little propane tank. Couldn't be easier. You know, the thing unfolds, and you've got yourself a grill for whatever it is that you want to cook out there. And I cooked a whole bunch of things. I cooked some pulled pork tacos out there, pulled pork tacos with lettuce and tomato, you know, and some salsa verde on it. Really delicious. I cooked up some sweet and sour shrimp. Really, it was just grilling the shrimp on these Weber Traveler grills and then adding some sweet chili sauce. Could not be easier, but man, oh, man, was it a hit. We had a lot of people, a lot of fans, you know, that were going to opening day, and people just who lived in Bridgeport, they came out, you know, to watch the live broadcast, and we fed them like kings while they were out there. I made a whole bunch of grilled pizzas on the grill, which is one of my favorite things to do on the grill. They're delicious, and it could not be simpler. All the recipes are up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. And I made the two things that were the biggest home runs, if you will, if I may use a baseball metaphor, since we were out at home open, you know, the home opener. A big hit was the homemade Italian beef that I made. Now, I actually made it the night before on a slow cooker, but you could easily do it on a grill out at, you know, wherever you're tailgating anyway. But I, you know, with for tailgating, you make it in the slow cooker and you just bring the slow cooker out and plug it in and just re-warm it up again. And you can toast the Italian buns, you know, the rolls on the grill a little bit to crunch them up a tiny bit. Put this delicious homemade Italian beef on there. I had roasted up some green peppers. I had a bottle of the Giardiniera. So you could put either the sweet green peppers on there or the Giardiniera, either one. But both were super delicious. By far, the most popular thing that I made out there that day was something that I call brat kebabs, where I took just regular old bratwurst. It's like six in a pack, something like that. I cut each brat into four pieces and then put them on skewers with pieces of red onion, alternating red onion and red peppers and green peppers, and put them on the grill, toasted them all up on the grill. And now you've got these bratwurst kebabs, brat kebabs, that you can just, you know, eat like a shish kebab, or if you want, you can put it on a roll if you want to. I had some nice spicy mustard out there as well that I like with bratwurst. But so you can do one way or the other. And since that day that I did it, I've been getting texts and social media messages from people telling me that they either did the brat kebabs and loved them, or they were inspired to adapt. And some people did Italian sausage kebabs. You know, basically, you're just taking the whole piece, the whole sausage link, cutting it into four pieces, putting it on a skewer with whatever you want. And some people took the Italian sausage and cut it up and skewered it up with peppers, with onions, with mushrooms, with cherry tomatoes, all kinds of options with that. Some people took chorizo sausage and they did chorizo kebabs, same thing. So, you know, you can adapt this any way that you want to. I imagine you could do it with Polish sausage, right? You could do it like with an Eckridge sausage and do it as kebabs with whatever you want to skewer it up with. Highly, highly, highly recommend it, especially since we're going to be talking about, really super nice weather. I mean, definitely grilling weather by the end of this week. That is, something that you'll want to give a try. It was incredibly popular. That's what I'm saying. Let me see here. Okay, so let me take a break, And then I'm going to tell you about the best Easter ham that you'll ever have. All of these recipes, by the way, things that I'm talking about, you can find them at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. Very easy to find these recipes. As a matter of fact, if you text the word cooks to 97999, get on your phone where you send a text message. In the message part, put cooks, COOKS. And then where you would put somebody's phone number or their name, just put 97999, and it'll go right to the TV station. That will automatically put you on the list. So whatever it is that I cook on TV, automatically will send you the recipes. Text the word cooks to 97999, and I'll tell you about my Easter ham recipe next. Happy Easter Sunday to you. Earlier this morning on WGN television, I reran an interview that I did last year with Ted Neely, who was the original Jesus in the movie version of Jesus Christ Superstar. He actually originated the role on Broadway, by the way. He's been a longtime pal of the show, and I was going to have him live on the show today. We've done it for several Easter Sundays. He's in Italy right now. I communicated with him during the week, and he said, sorry, I can't do the show. I'm in Italy touring. He's doing a Jesus Christ Superstar in Italy right now, and couldn't join us, but sends his best and all the best wishes for a happy Easter. So if you want to see the interview that we did with him last year, it's up at WGNTV.com/Dean's List. If you missed, by the way, the interview, a full-hour interview that we did with the legendary Carol Burnett earlier this morning on this show, we are going to post that. Producer Jack Heinrich is going to be posting that on the web later on, so you'll be able to hear the whole thing at your leisure. It's 12:53 right now, and our Food Time segment continuing with Easter Sunday help. If you need it, if you've got last-minute questions, do our best to answer your questions. I wanted to share the very best Easter ham recipe that I think I've ever had. We did this couple of years on TV. Now, I did it in slow cooker. So obviously, if you're going to be serving Easter dinner or brunch today, probably would take a little too long in the slow cooker. But you can easily adapt this and just do it in the oven. And it would, in the oven, this recipe, maybe 90 minutes, between an hour and 90 minutes, because ham is already cooked, really. You're just really warming it. And the secret to this delicious recipe that I'm about to give you really is more the homemade glaze that you can put on it. I mean, you can, sometimes the hams will come with a little packet of glaze. It's okay. But I just like it homemade better. You can buy jars of ham glaze. It's so easy to make it, and it's so much more delicious. And here's the glaze. Now, you get yourself a 7 to 8 pound. I got a spiral cut ham. You can do it with bone in or without bone. You know what? You could even do a canned ham if it's easier for you to do that, or if you just want something smaller than 7 to 8 pounds. You'll have to adjust the cooking time if you get something smaller. But for a 7 to 8 pound ham, it's about, I would say, between 70 and 90 minutes. Because really all you're doing, again, is just warming that ham up with the glaze on it. And the glaze is this. It's a 1 cup of dark brown sugar. It's a 1/2 cup of maple syrup. It is 2 cups of pineapple juice. So take that concoction, put it in a little bowl, and mix it up until it's fully dissolved. I would then get some whole cloves. I love whole cloves on ham. You poke holes, take a knife and just, make some holes, and then stick the cloves all over the ham. Decorate the ham completely. It's very pretty, for one thing, when you bring it to the table. It's very decorative. But also, it's super delicious. I also get some slices of ham, the circles. And then I put that glaze all over the ham. I put the cloves all over the ham. I do the cloves first, otherwise it gets a little messy. And then I just drape some of these pineapple slices all over it. And then I put it in a slow cooker. If you're going to do the slow cooker, 6 to 7 hours. But if you want to do it kind of on the quick today in the oven, wrap this whole thing up in foil and put it in the oven, 350 degrees, 70 to 90 minutes. Guaranteed you will have one of the most delicious hams that you've ever had in your life.